how can I help kids use representations to make sense? And I think for me, the kind of the most logical thing is, well, let them come up with their own representations first, because that will build on their own understanding. And then how do we help them see connections between their representation and another representation? Like, that's true sense making, not here's how you do tape diagrams. Step one, draw this. Step two, divide that. Like, proceduralizing representations does not lead to sense making.
In today's episode, we focus on how we can support students in making sense of mathematics. We believe this is a topic near and dear to the hearts of our listeners, as well as to Curtis and me. We wonder about ways of knowing what it looks like and sounds like in the classroom when students are making sense, and all the ways sense-making is baked into the standards for mathematical practice. We talk about the importance of intentional planning that allows for student sense-making through tasks, questioning, and time. There's a lot to unpack here, so let's get growing.
Well, Joni, here we are again. It is mid-April, and we are recording the Room to Grow podcast. I'm very excited to be doing this again with you today. Today, we have a really cool topic that we're going to be talking about, this idea of making sense of mathematics, a topic that is near and dear to our hearts, and I think probably just about every math teacher's heart on the planet. So really excited to be chatting with you about this again today.
Yeah, me too, Curtis. And I think, you know, as we've gone through our planning conversations for this particular episode, I think we have touched on so many of these ideas in several other of the topics that we've discussed. And I'm excited to kind of pull it all together under this frame of making sense of mathematics. And when we're talking about making sense of mathematics, we're talking about students making sense of mathematics, and thinking about, you know, what does that look like? What does that mean? And how do we ensure that that's happening as educators? Because like you said, this is something that surely every math teacher wants their students to make sense and understand. And I'll just kind of start off with, you know, a quote that takes me back to my district math coordinator days when the new Common Core State Standards came out. I remember watching these videos that were published by the lead writers of the Common Core Standards that were intended to help people make sense of them a little bit, right? To understand what the intent behind the writing of the standards were. And I will never forget, I can even just picture his face right now. One of the videos, Bill McCollum says, "Math makes sense." And then he went on to talk about how even in his position at the college level, he so often sees students that come in thinking that math is just a set of rules and procedures and never understand that there are bigger concepts at work there. But that math makes sense is just such a powerful, you know, three-line quote that has stuck with me for a long time. So, you know, to frame our conversation today, I'm going to throw a question at you to respond to. How do we know if students are actually making sense of the mathematics that we're learning, or if they're just thinking about math as a set of rules and procedures to apply?
So I think that's a really good question. And I wondered if you were going to throw that at me or if I was going to get a chance to throw that question to you on this. And I don't know that I have a good, perfect answer for that. I don't even know if there is a good, perfect answer to that. I know in a lot of our conversations pre-podcast, we were talking about this idea of how do you even measure understanding? Because in most of the measurement ways that we do measurement, there's some level of procedure that has to happen. And I think that's where we struggle, or at least I did, in terms of trying to measure my students' understanding, because there is some level of, you know, structure and procedure and getting to an answer that happens. So thinking about what does understanding look like for a kid and for my students in my classroom. I think about my son, Tegan, and we were looking at a math test that he was taking, getting ready for the state exam recently. And I was asking him some questions around, you know, statistics and the bar graphs and the statistical plots that he was looking at. And it seemed to me that was a place where I could get a level of understanding for him, because there wasn't because we were having a real conversation. And maybe that's the way that we can get at it in our classrooms, as much as we possibly can, is around conversation or even these essay type responses, if we're actually trying to use this in some sort of an assessment space. But I think it does boil down to the conversations and being able to have students explain the way and the thought process that they use to execute whatever the task is that we had them doing. So, you know, in the case of Tegan, when we were looking at, and I think it was a histogram, and I don't remember the content or the context rather of the histogram itself, but thinking about when I was prompting him about that histogram and sort of his interpretations of it. And I was asking him, you know, some typical questions about shape and about mean and about median and where do those kind of lie in the distribution, and getting some of his feedback on how he was thinking about those questions I asked him. This is really the only way I had any level of understanding his understanding.
Mm-hmm. I like it. As you were talking, I was thinking one of the things that makes sense making hard to assess is it's not necessarily like the end goal, right? Like making sense is something that happens all the way through the learning. You've got to do some making sense at the beginning of learning a new concept, because you've got to be able to anchor it to previous information and already known knowledge and, you know, put it within the greater landscape of your knowledge. And then as you develop understanding or learn a procedure or, you know, start to get a better grasp on the mathematics, then there's room for another layer and depth of sense making. And then if you talk about like getting to the end of quote unquote understanding, and this is where assessment comes in, right? Where we're kind of, when we assess, we're trying to determine the end product of student learning. What do they know at this moment in time?
Right.
And that sense making around a particular math topic might not end at a unit test or an exit ticket from a daily lesson or even a state standardized assessment where, you know, this particular math topic is not going to be assessed formally again. The sense making doesn't end there. So that idea of we continue to make sense. And I think for me, that's one of the things that I love about doing teacher professional learning is I continue to make sense of mathematics myself, even you know, as an adult with lots of years of studying these topics behind me and lots of exposure to them. So I also want to tie back to the standards for mathematical practice, because I think those are ways to help us frame like what specifically does it look like when a student is making sense. And, you know, of course, in the first standard for mathematical practice, we see make sense of problems and persevere in solving them. So that word is like coming in, they're like, make sense. It's right there, the very first two words of that math practice. But we see sense making through, I mean, I would argue we could probably go into every single one of those eight math practices and find sense making in there somewhere. But I really like from this first one, some of the language in there to think about whether students are making sense, explaining to themselves the meaning of a problem. So I really love that idea of having students be metacognitive and self-reflect on their own understanding. Like, if I can't explain to myself, then there's no way I could be making sense. I also really liked change course if necessary, evaluate their progress and change course if necessary. There's some sense making around, wow, what I'm doing is not productive, is not getting me closer to what I'm trying to understand. So that ability to recognize when I don't understand or when something isn't making sense and I can and I can change that. And then just the continually ask themselves, does this make sense? And how does this make sense? That kind of reminded me too of the ask yourself questions that Grace and Amy talked about when we had them on our podcast a few months ago. So those are some of the things that I'm thinking about.
You know, it's really interesting, and there's been kind of a cool conversation that's happening. I don't know if you've seen it in the MyNCTM blog this last week, or I guess it's a digest that is posted out there. And there's been a conversation around hundreds charts. And I know neither of us were elementary teachers, but just thinking about that and watching the conversation, and I don't pretend to be an expert on numeracy or even how students establish or understand number, but there was a conversation about reflecting the hundreds chart. You know, typically, if you think about it, like I know when I was in school and even, you know, watching my own kids in school, and even this really, you know, the numbers charts that I've seen that are area based, right? So you have a multiplication chart rather that goes, you know, 1 to 100, but it's top down. It's literacy based. It's the way we read articles. But there's been a conversation about reflecting that. And doing it from the bottom up, these hundreds charts, building
them
from the bottom up, and doing you know, counting numbers 1 to 100 bottom up, and the conceptual or the making sense connections that can happen if we do it that way. So there's a lot to this idea of looking at and making sense of mathematics, and even from the number perspective, the way that we present things to students. And that actually kind of leads me to thinking a little bit about another question, which is, you know, we talk a lot about teaching in the podcast. We talk about a lot about shifting our perspectives and shifting maybe the methodologies, or even growing in some of the ways we approach and plan. But if we're thinking about sense making, how does that look different in my classroom than maybe it did before? Or what are some of the things that are inherent in a classroom where making sense is sort of a primary focus?
Oh, I love this question. I don't know that when I reflect on my own days in the classroom, I don't know that sense making was really a part of something I did every day. I think that it requires a teacher's intentional planning to give the opportunities for that to happen, right? So some of the things I'm thinking about first and foremost is time. We have to give kids time in order to make sense. It's not something that, you know, they're going to hear a new idea or after the introduction of a concept is going to immediately click for them. Like giving them the time and space without direct instruction, without even necessarily, you know, the teacher's voice, to just think and wrestle with and engage with a mathematical idea with some maybe guidance and structure around how they can make sense of it. So I think time is the most important thing, and being able to, I know it's also one of the biggest things that teachers struggle with. There's always this pressure for time. And I know, I don't think I taught a single day where I didn't feel like, oh my gosh, I have so much to cover. So relieving ourselves from that burden so that we can create this space. And then the other component that I think is really important from my perspective is planning our questioning, thinking about how we anticipate students are going to engage, and ensuring that we have open-ended questions that allow us to guide students towards the sense making. And I think that comes from like really intentional planning ahead of time, thinking about, okay, here's the concept I'm trying to get them at. Here's where I think they are. And then here are some ways I can guide them to connect that gap. Or maybe here's a question I could ask to get a better sense of where they are. And then based on what they say, here's what I might ask next to help guide them to that sense making. And Curtis, I would love, I know when we were planning for this conversation, you talked a little bit about the sage on the stage, guide on the side. Would you kind of jump in and elaborate on that a little bit? Because I thought that was a really powerful way to think about this.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what I remember talking about on this, and you know, it's a, I mean, we hear that conversation a lot. That's been a, you know, been a statement that's put out there many times over, right? This idea of we need to not be the sage on the stage, and we need to be more the guide on the side. But I, one of the things that I'm passionate about that does not mean that all of a sudden the guide on the side is, I mean, you're still guiding, right? Like you're not just completely right. Hands off. You're not just stepping away.
You're not just standing in the corner with a smug grin on your face.
Let the kids just run rampant with a particular right. thing. It is more about, and I think there's a huge skill and even a practice, right? So this is a developed thing. Over time in the questioning and the thinking about how can I help guide this conversation so that the students have opportunity, plenty of it, to make and reason, and make sense and reason about this task or whatever. And you know, I was thinking about this, does it require like a real task? Does it require a super heavy, you know, we hear a lot about implementing great tasks, and certainly there's a sure. lot of value in having tasks that are, you know, low floor, high ceiling, open, you know, types of questions with lots of pathways in the middle of them. And certainly those things are hugely important, but does it require that? Well, no, I think I can allow my students good reasoning, even with tasks that maybe don't meet all of those requirements or have all of those things out there. I think the bigger thing that I was trying to get at with this was, you know, there's a balance to it, right? Sage on the stage says, all the information comes from me. The order of my desks, right? The way that my desks are oriented, everything is pointed at me. You know, I remember early in my teaching career, I even had in my room, not only did I have rows and in my room, but I actually had rows that were in sort of a U shape. I mean, you want to talk about,
wow.
You want to talk about, you know, putting my students in the position of, you know, sit and get, you know, early on in my teaching career, this is how I had my classroom.
It's all about you.
Right. Like and that was not a perspective that I understood that I was, yeah. you know, if you would have asked me, was I you know, trying to be the sage on the stage, I would have said, no, I'm trying to, you know, I want my students. I never would have understood even the orientation of my classroom putting me as the sage on the stage. So thinking about, there are lots of ways that we can get at this idea of putting ourselves on the side, allowing students the opportunity to, and the space to think. You brought up time. I think that's huge. I think there's also the idea of giving the student, you know, removing the pressure, giving them, setting up the task or setting up the activity in such a way that they have space to do multiple drafts of their thinking, right?
Right.
So, you know, the folks and the focus on, you know, I know Peter Lilliedahl's book and building thinking classrooms and the idea of vertical learning surfaces with, you know, a non-permanent writing surface, right? So dry erase board or, you know, sort of some sort of sticky note page that's non-permanent, whatever it is, giving the students multiple opportunities to rehash their thinking, be on their feet and do this. That lends itself to the sense making about a scenario or about a math problem or a math task or something of that nature. So those kinds of things come to mind whenever we're talking about, you know, this idea of what does my teaching look like when my emphasis is on the making sense of mathematics. I think there's also plenty of opportunity to think about, you know, we're both high school background and our focus tends to often be on the things that we taught or whatever. But I think there's opportunity, you know, Pam Harris talks and does a lot with numeracy and has the focus or the quote, math is figure outable, right? So that's her, yep, her thing, right? It is sense making. And I see her posts, and I think she's still doing it. I haven't looked on Twitter or X, I guess, in a long time to know if she's still doing this. But she used to lead these math talks on there, where she would post a problem that had some sort of a unique number thing in it and ask people to post how they worked it and the way that they thought about doing the problem. And there was always these fascinating ways that people, ridiculously creative ways that people made sense of the task that she put out there. And I wonder if there's opportunity for us to do those kinds of things that maybe aren't in high school, that aren't curriculum based activities necessarily, right? They're older, right? So our kids are not necessarily doing a lot of the numeracy things now in high school. But do we provide opportunities just once in a while to allow the students an opportunity to make sense? It isn't so much about the numbers and numeracy, but it's the process of making sense. How do I break this thing down? How do I put it into a bite-sized chunk? How do I get close enough that I can, right, that I can think about this thing? And what was it that made sense about my close enough answer? Not because that particular problem was the thing that we're focused on in high school, but it's the process of getting students to make sense and think and do that.
I like that. I think bringing up, you know, this idea of non-curricular tasks, I think about that too as a way to break the cycle of, and I know we talked about this before, of, you know, in math class, sometimes students can get the impression that what I'm supposed to do is figure out what answer the teacher wants me to give here. Or, gosh, we've just spent the last week solving equations in one variable. So I must, if the teacher's giving me this, I must apply that skill, even if the context of the problem doesn't create any sense making, right? So I love that idea of going to a non-curricular task to both get students sort of break the thinking about, here's the math we've been working on, so every problem I give you is going to be an application of this math topic we've been working, right, on. And also like kind of resetting them to just make sense. Just use your brain. Just use what, you know, your interaction with the world. It's back to Bill McCollum. Math makes sense. So helping kids break free from what are the rules and procedures to just, how do I reason about this? And how do I tap into what I know and understand about this particular mathematics to make sense of it? And I want to tie back a little bit to, you were talking about tasks. And, you know, one of the things I really wrestled with in preparation for this is it about the task? Like, there's always been so much emphasis on finding these rich tasks that allow students to reason. But I think kids can reason even about, you know, a worksheet of practicing a procedure. Mm-hmm. You know, you could look at a series of, back to your point about the hundreds chart, right? It's very procedural. Memorization of facts is important, or, you know, knowing how those numbers all relate to each other and what the patterns are. But there's sense making involved in that too.
For sure.
So I just think it's important to think about all of the opportunities we have as educators to present students with questions that allow them to make sense. And for sure, some of those resources are hugely important in doing that. The other thing that I was thinking about in preparation was the use of representations. So we use models, right? Like we use drawings or even like a tea table to draw a graph or all these different ways that we represent the mathematics. And I think representations can be such an important component of sense making for students. And at the same time, I think there can be danger in teaching a representation for the sake of learning the representation and without, like, it's possible to focus on a representation without bringing sense making alongside of it. So, how do you avoid that? How do you not just make it about, you know, oh, we're supposed to solve this problem by, you know, drawing a double number line, Mom. I can't do it the way you're helping me understand it because I have to do it with a double number line. And it's like, oh, that's, the representation is getting in the way of the sense making, right? So thinking about as an educator, like how can I help kids use representations to make sense? And I think for me, like the kind of the most logical thing is, well, let them come up with their own representations first, because that will build on their own understanding. And then how do we help them see connections between their representation and another representation? Like that's true sense making, not here's how you do tape diagrams. Step one, draw this. Step two, divide that. Like proceduralizing representations does not lead to sense making.
Oh, wow.
There's my mic drop moment.
Yes. Hey, that is a mic drop moment. I just about jumped out of my seat when you were saying that, because in my head, and your mic drop moment is exactly it. We often, and I'm guilty of it too, proceduralize those representations that are intended to help students make sense. I was watching poor Tegan. He gets picked on a lot. I'm going to bring up Truitt here in just a second too, but and my our podcast listeners are going to feel like they know my kids one of these days. Maybe I'll bring them on the podcast someday. So poor Tegan, we were working on number lines, adding integers the other day, and Tegan can see the numbers in the expression and knows how to evaluate that.
Yep.
He can look at the expression, you know, 10 plus negative 3 equals, and he can give me 7 pretty fluently.
Mm-hmm.
We were working on his Chromebook. He was working on an online assessment of this whatever, a homework problem or whatever. And there was a math representation. And I remember very vividly, it was a multiple choice problem. The initial expression was 9 plus negative 4. And actually, I'm not even sure that there was an initial expression. It was just the arrow diagram. So on the picture,
got it,
there was an arrow slightly above the number line, pointing to the right, starting at 0, going out to positive 9.
Going to 9.
And then one above that was going from positive 9, left 4 units. He was supposed to pick the two possible expressions that were there.
That aligned with that diagram.
And he, I think, was very much caught up in a literacy sort of format. He was reading top down. And he continued over and over and over to be looking for expressions that started with a negative value, because he was seeing the first
that
line.
That was the top arrow.
and it was going left.
He's reading from top to bottom.
Exactly.
So he's not starting at the number line and looking above it. He's starting at the top arrow.
Exactly.
Going, oh, that's an arrow pointing to the left 4 units. So I must start with -4.
I must be starting with -4. And instead
But it starts at the 9. So it doesn't make sense why it starts at the 9 and goes to the...
Yeah.
Oh, and so, I can totally see him, how that would be so messing him up.
Him seeing, not seeing the bottom arrow starting at 0, like he was so caught up in the top arrow being an arrow to the left, he kept choosing the -9s, even though he knew it wasn't -9.
Right. I mean,
he could have told me the result was 5 10 times over if
no problem.
All we had
yes.
was the expressions. But we had this visual representation. Yes. We were trying to make sense. And I'm not faulting the visual expression. I'm just putting it out there that sometimes we proceduralize these things and students get in this routine of trying to make sense of the representation and proceduralize this representation instead of thinking about the mathematics, and we get lost in it so often. On the flip side of that, I want to celebrate the visualizations that happen in my younger son's mind. He was solving a problem. It was some ratio. He was trying to figure out how many cookies were in each group kind of problem. It was a nice division problem. And he had, it was 56 cookies, and they were 8 students or whatever. And he was needing to come up it was 7 students. I apologize. It was 7 students. And in his mind, he saw 7 groups of 7 is 49.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, and 7 more is 56. And so, yes, he was supposed to do this division thing in his head, and he even had that written out on the paper. But he could see the square number, and he talks, I think I've talked about that before. He sees those square numbers, and he sees the squares. And then he was able to tack on 7 more to get the 56.
And then builds from there, which is great. That's great sense making.
So, I mean, I don't want to jump, you know, so celebrating one representation and then having the proceduralized version in the other child. It was just when you were talking about that, both of those two stories were in my mind going, my gosh, you're saying exactly what I think of. And really, when we think about, you know, how folks have, you know, over time rejected even what was introduced with the Common Core, and long before the Common Core, other methods of these representations, visual representations, and people trying to do conceptual understanding, we have sometimes demonized those representations because not because the representations were bad, but because the representations were proceduralized and the sense making was stripped out. And it's like, well, yeah, of course the standard algorithm would be simpler or faster or whatever. If what we're doing is just a procedure.
Trying to get the answer. Yes.
But if what we're trying to do is make sense, then maybe we can use this representation to help us make sense of the mathematics that we're trying to accomplish.
I just want to chime in here too, Curtis, a comment that we shared with one another when we were planning for this. Like, we're not suggesting that this idea of sense making and engaging with conceptual understanding is the end all be all in mathematics.
Like,
there's a role for procedures. There's a role for getting answers quickly, efficiently, and accurately. Like, we're not suggesting that you should throw all of your lessons that are procedure lessons out the window and always focus on sense making. I think what we're trying to get at is what an integral part of learning that is, and how, again, just thinking of weaving it throughout the entire learning process and not thinking about it as replacing other parts of learning, or as it not just being an end goal, like an end of unit, you know, I've got to put a sense making question on my final unit assessment. No, this should be, I loved what you said earlier about like having real conversations throughout the teaching process that just allow students to express themselves, not in a, like, you have to say this, you know, these words have to be included in your written explanation or whatever, but just to let them talk about how they make sense. And I'm thinking about all the resources that we have as educators to help us understand and to give us strategies for how we might do this. So certainly when I was talking about the representations and making connections between how individual students might have thought about representing a mathematical concept, I was thinking about the five practices for orchestrating productive mathematical discussions, right? Like, that's a great structure for eliciting different ways of thinking about mathematics and then orchestrating, so now there's not a better word, orchestrating a procedure, a way for students to share their thinking and to help students see the connections between different representations and different ways of making sense about a problem. And I also think there's a lot of power in the effective mathematics teaching practices that NCTM published in Principles to Actions years ago, and the mm-hmm. Taking Action series do such a nice job of helping unpack those by the different grade bands. But I'm zeroing in on the eighth one, elicit and use evidence of student thinking. Like, if I am really trying to find out how students are thinking mathematically and bringing evidence of their thinking into my instruction, I think I'm going to be tapping into their sense making and giving them, again, the space and the voice to be able to talk about how they make sense. And then again, I think one of the things I saw often in all the classrooms I was in was failing to summarize the lesson. And this is a great way to, you know, connecting how students are thinking differently is a great way to summarize.
No, I think you hit on it. And that collecting and that constructing and orchestrating that conversation, you know, we've been saying this over and over again. And I just, as you were talking about this, I even just realized, like, the phrase making sense, the first word in that, making, is a construction word. Like, we are putting together, we are doing sense. We are doing this construction of the sense, right? We are making sense, making things come together. Mm. Like, it's a construction sort of thing. And that just hit me as we were talking about this, and you were talking.
It's not a passive thing. It's not active. It's active. I like that.
It is active. Ooh, so the student is active, and we are active as teachers in that same space. All of this making sense of mathematics, you know, you brought it up and we've iterated it, and I won't reiterate hopefully too much the idea that, you know, we do need procedural things. We do need to be able to get to answers. And we do need to be able to have evaluations and assessments and know what students know and can carry out, right? In order to be able to fit into the system that we've got of education and classes and moving students along that system. But, you know, in reading and preparing for this podcast and thinking about this, I looked at some summaries of Peter Lilliedahl's book, Building Thinking Classrooms. And one of the quotes that was brought out, and I read it off of Robert Kaplinsky's blog about this, about Peter's book. And he shared the quote from the book that says this. It says, the goal of, and it's Building Thinking Classrooms, but I would argue that even just the goal of our mathematics teaching is not to find engaging tasks for students to think about. The goal of thinking classrooms, and again, I would say just mathematics teaching, is to build engaged students that are willing to think about any task. Mm-hmm. I mean, what we're doing and why we care so much about making sense of mathematics is not necessarily that every student who's graduated high school and into college or whatever, or off into their career, is all of a sudden capable at, you know, 20 years down the road of being able to factor quadratic or, you know, perform right. some task that we had them do in their Algebra 1 or Algebra 2 class. It's that that person 15, 20 years post high school has retained the sense-making process that we taught them in our classrooms. I mean, that's ultimately the goal of what we're trying to do in our math classes when we talk about making sense. Yes, we want to make sense about the math for the time being because we have a course that we're teaching and we have standards to meet and we have assessments and all those things. But ultimately, the things that we want them to be lifelong is the ability to construct sense, to be able to make sense of things.
And there's your mic drop moment. Well, that's it for this time. Be sure to check the show notes for the resources we mentioned and others you might want to explore. We would love to hear your feedback and your suggestions for future topics. And if you're enjoying learning with us, consider leaving a review to help others find us and share the podcast with a fellow math educator. See you next time.